Let's make today the day you get one step closer to becoming the parent you've always wanted to be and the parent your children deserve. Hi, and welcome to Powerful Parenting for Today's Kids. I am your host, Erin Taylor, and I have wanted to help parents and children literally since I was 11 years old. I created this podcast to help you make a stronger, healthier, deeper connection to your child, to understand the inevitable challenges a little better, and learn some new ways to navigate them when they occur. Thank you for spending some time with me. Now let's get this show started. Hello and welcome back to the show. Today is episode 639, and I am excited to talk to my new friend, Jason Reed. Jason is a father of four, an entrepreneur and author of multiple books, and the founder of a nonprofit, ChooseLife.org, with the mission to end teen suicide by the year 2030. Jason speaks to audiences around the country about how parents can converse with their children about mental health. His TED Talks and Goalcast videos about strengthening the mental health of teens and young adults have been viewed by almost 5 million people. His family's story of losing their 14-year-old son Ryan is featured in the documentary Tell My Story, which is currently in release. Welcome, Jason. I'm so excited to have this conversation with you.
Thank you, Erin. Thanks for having me on here today. I've been looking forward to this.
So before we hit record today, we were talking about the stress that is on parents and kids and families. Particularly, it's, I think, exacerbated with this pandemic. What are you seeing in your efforts to help families?
So I did a TED Talk called The Hot Lava Talk, where I compare what it was like to grow up when I was a kid to now. Whereas when I grew up, there was two TV channels and you didn't watch the news and you didn't care and you didn't have to worry about getting a scholarship to go to college because college was inexpensive, everybody went, and there was no pressure, no stress. And you compare it to what kids live like now, we're talking even pre-pandemic, because I did the TED Talk pre-pandemic, and how it's so stressful for kids to know about global warming, to know about whether we're going to go to war, to know, but which none of us paid attention to when we were growing up, right? To worry about whether college, whether, you know, whether they should be in what travel ball team and whether they got on the travel ball team, and social media, which never existed. In order for me to talk to my friends when I was a kid, if I was at home, they'd have to call the phone. My dad would answer, and he'd decide if I was allowed to talk to them and how long I was allowed to talk to them for. Mm. And the usual answer was no. So it's such a different world. And take a look at the pressure these kids are under pre-pandemic. Mm-hmm. It's part of the reason why our suicide rates are as high as they are amongst kids, amongst people. Mm-hmm. Now you add the pandemic to it, and these kids are now, I mean, kids are social animals. They're pack animals. Mm-hmm. They're not meant to be by themselves. Mm-mm. They're meant to be with their pack, meant to grow and learn from their pack, right? Mm-hmm. And they've been unable to be with their pack. And then now they're out there with their pack, but they're not sure they should be around their pack because they're worried about getting sick from their pack. Mm-hmm. And all the mental gymnastics they go through. And then you take all the parents and all the pressure we're under trying to try to figure out how to make a living, to try and figure out how to work from home. The stress, I feel so bad for people who are, you know, two or three or four kids in a two or three bedroom house, and they're trying to find an office space to do their Zoom calls. And we got better for a while late last summer, and now we're right back in the middle of it again. Mm-hmm. And so just as we think we're coming out, we're back in. Should we be afraid? Should we not be afraid? Is Omicron going to be the thing that takes us down? Or, oh, wait, it's okay. Are we going to be over with this? We've never been in this. Mm-hmm. Right? It's been 100 years since we had a pandemic like this. And so the pressure is massive. And by the way, I'd like to kind of shift the conversation a little bit today from away from suicide. And I'll tell you why. People don't like talking about suicide.
It's a very vulnerable, scary topic for people.
And it's hard to imagine it happened to one of your kids.
Mm-hmm. It's inconceivable.
I couldn't imagine.
Yeah.
Never thought it would ever happen. And the reality is, as big as a killer, as you know, it is the number two killer of our kids. And depending on what the numbers come out to be, because they're always late coming out, is it 6,000 or 7,000 or 8,000 kids that died last year from suicide? I don't know what the number is. I know it's bigger than it was when it was 2 years ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's still a small number of kids. So I don't think parents need to spend their days worried about, is my child going to kill themselves, when they seem fine. But here's the numbers that people don't pay attention to. 30 to 40% of kids are experiencing major depression issues or anxiety issues.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And depending on where you get your stats from, is 30% are having depression, 30% are having anxiety. Is that 50, 60% of kids have issues? I don't know. There's a large portion of kids, like some of the studies have shown that 25% of kids have had suicidal thoughts in high school in the last couple of years, last year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that you have to worry so much about will your child die of suicide, but what you should be paying attention to is that, is your child one of those kids who is living with depression and anxiety?
Mm-hmm.
That's not where they
live. It's so common.
Yeah. And 85% of those kids, as you know, are undiagnosed and untreated. We're not paying attention to the mental health of our kids. We're not sitting back going, are you okay? How do you feel?
I think you bring up such an important point. So important, because it is true. I agree fully that when we talk about teen suicide, it's such a scary topic. And parents who've lived this nightmare, as I'm sure you can attest to, didn't see it coming. And so it's like the boogeyman who's just going to jump out of the bushes in the dark. You don't know if or when it's going to happen. And so it's just, you can't wrap your head around anything around it. So it's just too overwhelming for us to think about. But I do love that you're suggesting that parents don't really stress and worry and hyper-focus on whether or not their child will commit suicide, but rather just focus on how are they feeling? How is their mental health? Are they really stressed? What is a reasonable amount of stress and anxiety? Well, anxiety, but what's a reasonable amount of stress? And then when does it reach that critical threshold where it's more than what is a reasonable expected amount of stress? And when do we have to intervene? And I think it is really important for us to just stay connected to them, keep the lines of communication open. And if we notice something, like, pay attention, observe our kids. Has something changed? Are their eating habits changing? Are their sleeping habits changing? Are their grades plummeting? Are they changing who they're hanging out with? Are they hanging out with no one when they had a bunch of friends? Like, are there some major changes that are happening that we need to look into and see if it has any significance?
Exactly, because at the end of the day, my message now to parents, and the message that I'm really trying to get out there is that if you want to save your kids, if you want to help your kids, if you want to make sure your kids lead a healthy life, if you want them to not die from suicide as well, I guess, you have to own the mental health of your kids.
Mm-hmm.
You as a parent, because if you're expecting a therapist or a teacher or a doctor or somebody like that to come along and save your children and make their lives better, it's not going to happen. There's just, as you and I were talking before the show started, in the universe of therapists, here we go.
Oh, yes.
Right? Now you go into how many of them actually know how to deal with depression and anxiety. Whoop, we just shrunk. How many of them are actually willing to talk to kids who might be suicidal? Whoop, now we're shrunk. And then how many know how to do it? properly. Now we're really small, right?
And the wait lists can be long.
And the ones that are actually any good, there's lots of great therapists.
Yes,
but there's not enough.
Not enough for as much as our kids are going through. Yes, good point.
We have to own the mental health for kids. We have to be willing to have the conversations. Like, if you saw your child drinking 5 grande mocha, whatever the hell it is, from Starbucks every single day, you go, wait a second. You shouldn't do that.
Yeah, that's an issue.
That's an issue to your health, right? I'm not going to let you do that to yourself physically, mm-hmm. right? Because I can see that that's going to have really detrimental effects on you. You're going to get diabetes, you're going to get overweight, whatever the heck might happen. But we are pre-programmed to go, that's a bad thing, don't do that. Because I'm worried about your health.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, many of us let kids stay in their rooms, on their phones, on social media, stop talking to each other, stop talking to them, exhibit signs that they're not well, and we ignore it. And we think it's just a phase.
Or that it's normal for teenagers.
Or normal teenagers. And I think that that's the misconception, is it's not really. It's unfortunately more normal because so many kids are depressed and so many kids are anxious. It becomes and looks like it's normal. But it doesn't mean it's a normal way to live.
Mm-hmm.
We should not be normalizing depression and anxiety.
Mm-mm.
And somehow in this culture, we've kind of normalized depression and anxiety. It's like, oh, no, that's just normal kids. Not really. You shouldn't have to live that way.
Mm-hmm. Good point. Good point.
And it's hard though, right? Because like, if you've never been depressed, which I never have been, to be fully honest, even with Lucy and Ryan, sad. Yeah. Every day.
Yeah.
Depressed, where I can't get out of bed and do anything. No, I don't understand. Mm-hmm. So what I'm trying to get across to parents too is that when you're talking to your kids who are depressed or anxious, and you've never been that way, it's really easy for a guy like me to come across and say, what's wrong with you? Why are you looking
get out of bed. Yeah.
Get out of bed. Go do something, right? Well, it's your girlfriend dumped you. So what? There's other girls. You'll be fine, right? She was an idiot anyway. Well, your boyfriend was an idiot anyway, right? You're a great person. Stop. What we don't understand, what I never understood, and the analogy I now use with parents all the time is saying, I live in Southern California. With the exception of today where it's cloudy, there's blue skies every day.
All the time.
There's rarely a cloud in the sky. So I can sit here from my office, look outside, and I'm going to see blue skies. If I was sitting here with somebody who's depressed, they're going to see only clouds.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing I can say that's going to convince them that there's no clouds in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
They're just going to see clouds. And if I try to convince them there's no clouds in the sky, they're not going to want to talk to me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
If I try to fix them, if I try to change their mind, they're going to clam up and not talk to me. And that's the worst thing that can happen.
Mm-hmm.
All I can do as a parent or as a friend is ask you about your clouds.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about your clouds. Why are they there? What do they look like? How do they show up? How do they make you feel? Do they ever go away? What makes them show up? Describe them to me.
Great questions.
And by the way, as you know, that's all therapists do. Tell me about your challenges. Mm-hmm. Tell me about your problems. Tell me why you feel that way. Therapists just ask questions and listen. They don't judge. They don't tell you that you're wrong. And in the art of therapy is getting people to talk. And I'm not a therapist. However, I've talked to a whole bunch of them. The art is to get people to talk about what their challenges are so they talk through them. Because you feel better talking about your problems and not being judged.
Not being judged. I think that's the critical element right there. To feel like you have a safe space, whether it's with a therapist, a parent, a friend, or whatever, to feel like you have a safe space to process through and digest and discuss what you're struggling with, and trust that that person you're speaking to will not think less of you. They're just going to be there to support you and maybe observe something that you haven't noticed, or ask you a really good question that's going to get you thinking, or help you to see your situation from a different angle.
Mm-hmm. And that's what today, as parents, we have to become better at, mm-hmm. is being our child's therapist.
But the thing is, we can do that. We can create a safe space for our kids to share what's troubling them without judging them. It's so hard. And parents have a hard time doing it. And this is something I work with parents with all the time. I like to tell parents, well, this is more in relationship to when our kids do something we don't like. Mm-hmm. Having a poker face. I encourage parents to have a poker face. So if your kid, you know, breaks the vase like they did on the Brady Bunch, or spills ink on the carpet, or, you know, gets a speeding ticket, or whatever they do that we're not pleased with, rather than erupting, just try to keep that poker face and deal with the situation at hand without the judgment and the overreaction and the, oh my gosh, I can't believe you did that. So I think the same thing is true when our kids are having challenges and struggles, to try to keep that poker face and not judge them, try to fix them. Because a lot of times our intentions as parents are very pure. We see our kids struggling and we just want to make it better. We just want to help them. We want to fix them, because it's hard to watch our kids suffering, whether it's a broken foot or whether it's depression. It's hard to watch them struggling in the muck of it, and we just want to make it better. And so it can be challenging, but just trying to remember to create that, I think, safe space to allow our kids to feel like they can tell us anything and we will listen. We will try to support them. We'll try to help them figure out whatever it is, and we'll go through it together.
And it won't make sense to you in some cases.
Oftentimes it won't.
Because in their world, the fact that they got a D on that test is the most important thing on the planet. The fact that their two friends went out without them and didn't call them is devastating.
Devastating. Yes.
The fact that someone, you know, was, you know, saying terrible things about them on social media or bullying them is the only thing in the universe that matters. And in your universe, you're worried about the pandemic, you're worried about being fired, you're worried about paying your mortgage payment, you're worried about all this stuff. You're going, I don't get why you're so, like, this is just crazy. If you can try to think back to what it was like to be them, you had the same things. And some of them, yeah, they're in our world, they're overreacting. In their world, they're underreacting. They're trying to pull it together, and they can't.
And their frame of reference is smaller. Their world, mm-hmm. their world experience, their world view is a little bit smaller. So it seems small to us, but in proportion to the amount of years that they've lived and the amount of experiences that they've had, it feels huge. It's a significant thing for them. Yeah.
And even if you head into adults, like if you have adults that are, you know, have mental health issues, and you're going, you're a full grown man, why are you worried about this? Well, because in their mind, it is the biggest thing. Mm-hmm. You're not going to change that. You can't fix it. Mm-hmm. And when you talk about this, we go back to this whole concept of a safe place. Because a lot of parents go, okay, so I want to do that for my kids. So I want to talk to my kids because I want to. I mean, I think every parent has the best intentions for their kids.
Absolutely.
I think we just screw it up along the way, including me. And when you think about how do we do it, it's like, well, we want them to talk to us. So what tends to happen sometimes is people listen to a podcast like this where you and I are chatting, say, I'm going to go talk to my kids. And they go barge into their room.
Let them talk.
going to talk. I just listened to a podcast. We need to talk.
Yeah.
And
yep.
That never works. Like, it didn't work when my parents barged into my room, and it doesn't work when I barged into my kids' rooms, right? Because, yes, you own the house, you own the room, you paid for everything in it. You are who you are. Got it. But in their world, the only space they have, the only safe space they have, is that little room and that bed, and that's all they got. The rest of the house is yours, in their mind. So you just barged into the only safe space they have and demanded to have a conversation and violated that space. And you wonder why they tell you to get the hell out of them. And then you get mad because they should never talk to you that way.
And then everything goes downhill from there.
Everything goes downhill from there. So knowing the time to talk.
That is a great point that you bring up, a great scenario that you paint, because so often I think, like you said, we as parents have the best intentions. We want to do it right. We want to do the parenting thing right, but we approach it from a misguided perspective or angle. And like you said, we barge in there and say, get off that video game. We need to talk. Well, now already we've set them off because we told them to get off and they're in the middle of whatever they're doing. And if they don't get off, we're going to be mad. If they do get off, they're going to be mad at us. And then we're going to force this conversation, which is going to go downhill. It's not going to get us anywhere. And then we're going to walk away feeling frustrated that every time I try, it blows up in my face. They're going to sit there and think, what the heck is wrong with my parent? Can't they just leave me alone? And everything goes sideways. So with that idea, with that situation in mind, what would you recommend to parents who are listening to our conversation and really want to support their kids, not overlook important things, and really open up those lines of communication?
Well, I would say a few things. The first thing I would say is that this is not a sprint. It's a marathon. Mm-hmm. You're not going to fix it tonight in one conversation. It's going to be multiple conversations over a lifetime. And you have to get that through your head. Second thing you have to understand is that they have to be open and willing to talk to you. When is that? Well, I don't know, but you do, because you know there's times when your kids are really chatty. Mm-hmm. It might be you're driving to school and that's when they like to talk to you. Mm-hmm. It might be on the way to a baseball game, maybe you take them golfing or fishing or something. There's times when they are just really willing to talk. And by the way, those times are usually inconvenient for you.
Yep.
Because parenting is inconvenient.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to be more willing to drop what we're doing, to take advantage of those times when they're willing to talk and go as deep as you possibly can during those times.
Mm-hmm.
When they are willing to be open, that's when you have to go. If they are not, you're not going to make them do that. If they don't want to talk to you, you're not going to win that argument.
No.
Never, ever win that argument.
No. And if you get anything out of them, it's not going to be useful.
They'll tell you what you want to hear and they're going to be done with you.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, so because curious. Whether you like it or not, I mean, and they're smart.
So that smart.
8 and 9 and 10 year old these days is not what I was an 8, 9, and 10 year old. They are much more worldly and they know a lot more of what's going on. I knew nothing. Right? Mm-hmm. And now they do. Mm-hmm. That 14-year-old is like the 18-year-old, right? And mm-hmm. it's like, and you can say you're just 14, and many, many, many ways they're 14, and maybe they're 12. But in other ways, they know a lot more about the world than we ever knew about.
Which gets back to why they carry around such a weight on their shoulders.
Yeah.
Because they developmentally are still only the age they are, but they're carrying around the weight of so much information about so many world problems that we just didn't have exposure to. That they now do.
Yeah, it's you know, parenting is a lot tougher now than I think when my dad was around and my mom was around.
Mm-hmm.
It just is. And it's not going to get easier. The pandemic has made it harder.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It has.
Mm-hmm.
It's been harder on all of us. Mental health issues in this country are skyrocketing, not just among kids. Right? We all had way too much time with our spouses. It didn't go so well for a lot of us. And everybody's married knows what I'm talking about. You had those great moments and you had those really crappy moments.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And you may be suffering from your own version of depression.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't make it easier to have to deal with other people's depression.
Mm-mm. It's not easy. It's not easy. The other thing that I'm noticing with my clients, and I would say it's just started happening since Omicron became a thing in the past month or so, I'm hearing a lot of concerns and worries about, oh my gosh, is my kid's school going to shut down again? Are they going to be back on doing online learning from their bedroom? Oh my gosh, we can't go back there. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. So just the addition of this rapidly spreading variant is re-traumatizing people. I mean, I'm just seeing it in my clients, but I know that they represent a large portion of the population of parents. And the stress, it was kind of like they were kind of going along, trying to learn how to live in this pandemic era with, you know, schools and activities being open and they have to wear masks, but at least they're there and this and that. And now their stress level is just spiked so high. And I think the important thing to notice in that situation is that the pandemic was a collective trauma, a trauma that we collectively experienced, we as adults, parents, children. And so that trauma can get re-triggered at any point. And I think Omicron is re-triggering a lot of people. And so if it's re-triggering us as parents, it's quite possibly re-triggering our kids. So
I think the news has done is just a terrible thing these days.
Yes.
Right? Because depending on what you want to read, I can read that Omicron's is just like a flu and most people are fine. If you're vaccinated, you're not going to die. And maybe you got a flu for a couple of days and there's worse colds out there. Or I can read that the hospitals are more fuller than they ever have been. And the death rate in Los Angeles yesterday was higher than it's ever been. And I can read that too. I can read that this will wash out over all of us. And by the time this podcast even airs, we'll be back down to normal levels because we're going to peak here in a week. Or I can read that the next variant that comes out will be even worse and we're just going to be stuck in this for the next 10 years.
Yep.
And it drives everybody nuts, including myself.
Mm-hmm. I think we could have a whole podcast on the warped state of our so-called news, but that's for a different topic.
Well, I mean, you could get into the government, how we react to this, how the CDC can't get his message straight. There's so many things wrong with the ball. The whole thing's a mess.
Yeah.
But I think that at a certain point, you can only control what you can control.
Bingo.
Right?
And what you can control is to turn that news off.
Yeah.
I think
you're right. Yes, maybe the schools get shut down again for a couple of weeks. Maybe it's a month. Yeah. But you know what? We'll get through it.
Mm-hmm.
I understand you're triggered because you hated the fact that your kids are going to be home. You hated what it did to them. You hate the government for doing it to us. And you hate Omicron for being here. I get all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But there's nothing we can do about it. There's nothing anybody can do about it at the moment.
Yeah, we just have to buckle up and get through it.
Just hold on to it. It's like we can live in it for now. And the one thing that's true in the last 2.5 years, whatever it's been 2.5 years now, 2 years, 3 years, I don't even know, I've lost track.
20 years.
I mean, it goes in waves, right? So it's really bad, then it's fine. That's really bad, then it's fine. It's really bad, then it's fine. So ride the wave.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have no choice but to ride the wave.
And isn't it interesting that that's kind of how life works, right? Sometimes we go through periods where it's quiet and peaceful and lovely and low stress. And sometimes a calamity happens and our stress level spikes and we have to get through it and solve the issue and fix something and whatever it is, whether it's job, house, health, it could be anything. But that's this is kind of like how life goes, right?
Peaks and valleys. And it's hard. I own companies and I coach CEOs. And my message to people this year when it comes to a business standpoint is I expect 22 to be one of the toughest years we've ever had, business-wise.
How so? Or how come? I'm just curious.
Oh, because you've got COVID, which is still here. Mm-hmm. I've got 20% of my staff out sick. Mm. We've got 7% inflation, which mm-hmm. is arguably higher than 7%, mm-hmm. right? Because we're not seeing the real inflation. I think it's higher. You've got the Fed's going to have to raise rates to control that, mm-hmm. which is going to cause ripples in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. You've got people who don't want to go to work because they're used to not working. You got people who don't want to go back to an office because they don't want to go back to an office. Mm-hmm. The whole world is upside down and will be for quite a while.
That's a great point. As we figure out what this new normal looks like.
So none of this is going to be easy. This year, 22, I believe, I tell people prepare for business-wise, one of the toughest years you're going to have to navigate. Hmm. It doesn't mean you're not going to have revenues. It doesn't mean you're going to have profits. It's going to be really, really, really hard to navigate it all. Because of all these outside influences. Mm-hmm. So as we say all that, that's what as parents we're dealing with, right?
Yep.
Do I need to go back to the office? Do I not need to go back to the office? Are my employees working? Are the people I manage working? I have a job. I don't want to go to that office. It's scary. I want to stay here. All this stuff we're dealing with. 22 is going to be hard. Expected to be hard. Now, at the same time, we've got our kids who are seeing all that. They're seeing how anxious we are. They're seeing how frustrated we are. And they've got their own issues. And now they don't know how to talk to us because we're on edge and they're on edge and they're dealing with all this stuff. And I know it's hard, but I'm just saying you have to find the way to slow it down and talk to your kids.
I think that you bring up a good point. Slow it down. I think one of the realizations that parents made in the spring of 2020 was when we were all forced to kind of put the brakes on, hunker down at home for whatever period of time it was. And just life was strange and weird. And we never did this before, but we were all going to get through it somehow, some way. And in those early days, I think one of the biggest aha moments that I heard from parents is how refreshing it felt to not have to run to all these sports practices and games and tournaments on the weekends and, you know, who's got to be where and when. They were sitting down for family dinners, they were playing games, they were baking cookies, whatever. So I think that's important to remember as we move forward from this conversation and from this point, to how important it is and how valuable it is as parents to try to slow down once in a while, because those quieter, slower moments, I think, really are, they create a fertile ground for our kids to be able to talk to us if we're not doing 1,600 things at once.
And it's a great example of balance too, right? So before the pandemic, we're all going a million miles an hour and everybody's got a sporting event and this and that and the other thing. And we're not spending time together. We're not having family dinners and things are bad. The minute the pandemic happens, we all go, wow, this is actually kind of nice. We're together, we're spending time together. And then we go, this is too much time together.
It's too much.
We got to get out of here. This is crazy. So, but there's somewhere in the middle is the right thing, right?
Yes.
Some of the mills are the right thing. But we can't forget the importance of owning our kids' mental health.
Yes.
We can't. It's like if you're not going to do it, no one's going to.
Yes. And when you said that before, each time you say that, it reminds me, it makes me think of like if our child came to us and said, when I chew, my tooth hurts. It hurts really bad. We would think, oh, you probably have a cavity. I better schedule you a dentist appointment. And then we take the child to the dentist and we get the tooth looked at. And so it's kind of the same thing. Our child might not come to us and say, oh, mom, dad, I'm just feeling so depressed right now. No, they're not going to say that. We're going to see it probably more in their actions, their behaviors, their lack of actions, what have you. But the same way we would take action and figure something out if our child had a toothache, it's the same thing. If we notice that our child looks like they're struggling emotionally, we have to figure out some steps that we can take or try to take to try to get them the help that they need, the same way we would if they had a toothache.
Yeah, if you use that analogy, you think about it this way too. It's like if your child came to you with a stomach ache, it might just be that they ate some candy, they had too much of something, they just have a little bug, or they might have an appendicitis. We don't know what it is.
How do we figure it out? Yeah.
So it might be nothing, and it might be something serious, but you're going to, as a parent, go, okay, so where does it hurt? And if I push there, is that, like, tell me how it hurts. Tell me why it hurts. Tell me what you ate. Mm-hmm. We're programmed to do that, right?
Yeah, we are.
Because we all know that if it was an appendicitis and it burst, it'd be really, really bad. So we don't want that to happen. So we're gonna go through the list of things to make sure it's not bad. Well, when a child comes to you and says, I just don't feel like going out today. I don't want to see my friends. It's like, what we don't do is what we should do is say, well, why? Talk to me about it. Tell me how you feel. Because it might be nothing.
Right.
Maybe they're just tired today.
Yep. Could be nothing.
Or maybe they are in a really bad way. But we are not pre-programmed to go through that list of things like we do with a stomachache. And we need to do a better job of it. And I'm also not saying that, you know, we should let kids get away with whatever they want to get away with because they say they're depressed or they say they're sad and they shouldn't. Well, I don't want to have to send, they don't want to go to school, so I'm not going to send them to school. They don't want to do their homework, so I'm not going to make them do their homework because then they get depressed. I'm not suggesting that at all, because there is unfortunately going to be some kids who, once they realize they can get away saying, well, I'm depressed and I want to go to school, then they're going to use that as a reason not to go to school. So I'm not suggesting that you go ahead so far as to say, well, I have to be completely wrap them in a bubble and worry about them every second of the day, because that's the wrong thing too. They have to experience stuff. They have to experience it. They have to fall and scrape their knee, right? They have to experience breakup and the emotions that go along with it. They have to be able to experience what happens when your friends go out without you or someone says a bad thing. They have to know how to live with a bully and deal with a bully. They have to, you can't protect them from all that.
No, but I think it does go back to what you were saying. Like if they say they have a stomach ache, we need to try to figure out what an appropriate level of reaction is. So if they have a stomach ache because they ate too much candy and it's Halloween, then we go, okay, well, I'm sure you'll feel better tomorrow. If they have a stomach ache and they are doubled over in pain, they can't stand up, well, then we probably have a worse situation in our hands. And I think that's the same thing when they're struggling emotionally. We have to try to gauge how significant is this. Is this, they don't feel like going out because they're tired. Okay, whatever, that's fine. Tomorrow they'll feel better. Or is this, did they just have a huge fight? Did someone betray them? Are they feeling so depressed they don't want to be with their friends? We have to see if we can figure out what the level of significance is, because it could be anything.
And there is a moment when you might have to take them to a therapist or to a hospital. The same as with appendicitis. Because if your child is telling you after you have this conversation and you ask them, and you need to ask them if you go down this far, if you're feeling, wow, something's wrong here, have you thought about hurting yourself? You can't be afraid to ask that question. You have to ask that question. Mm-hmm. Because you're not putting the thought in their head. It's already in their head.
Right. And simply allowing it out if it's in there.
And they need to get it out. They want you to ask them. Mm-hmm. Someone who is thinking or contemplating about hurting themselves or die or killing themselves, unfortunately, they don't want to do it. They want the pain to stop.
They want relief. Yeah.
So if you can help them get relief, they're all in. So they will tell you. Most of them are not going to hide it from you if you're having a fair, good conversation with them. Some do. Ryan didn't tell me anything, unfortunately, and I didn't ask the right questions. But they will tell you. And if they tell you that they're thinking about doing it, you need to ask them if they have a plan. Mm-hmm. Are they? And if they tell you, no, I just sometimes don't want to live. Okay, well, let's talk about that. And we need to get them to a therapist, and you need to have someone who can professionally talk to them. If they tell you, yeah, I'm thinking, like, I thought last night about taking your pills, and I might do that later this week, I don't know. Then they need to go to the hospital right away.
Right away. And that's appendicitis.
That's the appendicitis. Mm-hmm. And you can't be afraid to do that. You need to take them where they're going to be watched. Mm-hmm. Because it is serious, and they do a great job when they take him into the hospital. Mm-hmm. I get calls all the time, and I'm like, take your kid to the hospital now. And they'll spend a day in the hospital. Maybe they spend 2 or 3 days in the hospital. Maybe they spend longer in the hospital. But in most cases, what I have seen when that happens, the kids do better because now they're on a treatment plan, right? Now yes. They've got the right plan.
Now they have a frame of reference. And everybody's on the same page with it.
Yeah, you can't be embarrassed saying, I don't want to take my kid to the hospital because that's going to be some stigma around me. No, that might be the only thing that saves your kid's life. Mm-hmm. And I've had conversations with parents going, well, I didn't know I should take him to the hospital. I don't want to do that. I'm like, you need to do it right now. Right now. Because how are you going to feel if you didn't get them the care they needed and that appendicitis ruptured?
Mhm. Mhm. Heavy, heavy topic, isn't it? But hopefully, with this conversation that we're having, we're going to give parents the encouragement and the permission, and hopefully the courage to really stop for a moment and think about their child. And think about how their child has been doing today, yesterday, the past few weeks, months, what have you, and really take a good hard look at what we've observed, and is there a reason for concern, and have we checked in with our kids lately to see how they're feeling, what's going on, what they're dealing with at school, with their friends, etc. Just starting those initial conversations, just slowing down long enough, I think, to just check in with our kids, watch them. I remember when my kids were babies and we would swaddle them up and put them to sleep, babies, infants. And I remember just watching them sleep and just thinking, wow, this is the most incredible thing ever. And I think that, you know, we take that opportunity, I think, easily when they're infants to just look at them and marvel at the wonder of them. But then they become teenagers and surly and emotional. And I don't think we take that moment to marvel at them as much when they're older. So I think taking that moment or kind of checking back in and remembering how amazing it was when they were first born. I think if we kind of reconnect to that feeling that we have, I think that'll go a long way towards feeling, nurturing that emotional connection, that emotional tie that we had with them from the beginning.
And if you think about the swaddling thing, which I hadn't thought about until you mentioned it, we swaddle in infants to make them feel comfortable, cozy, and allow them to comfortably sleep.
And safe, yep.
And safe. The swaddling of a teenager is the conversation you have with a teenager.
Yes.
And if they feel loved.
Yes.
That's how you swaddle a teenager.
Yes.
You allow them to feel that they can tell you. They can tell you anything.
Yes.
And not be judged.
Yes.
That's how you swaddle a teenager.
Yes. That's the ultimate goal. If you can achieve that, you have reached the height. You've reached the mountaintop of parenting, I think.
Yeah. It's not easy.
It's not easy, but it is doable.
I'm not saying I did it right, and I'm not saying I still do it right. I don't. We all scrap.
And you know what the beautiful thing is, though? Kids are so resilient and forgiving, and parents always mess up. We always screw things up. Some worse than others, some more than others. But if we recognize that we screwed up and we tell our kids, you know what, I'm really sorry, I screwed that up big time, they're going to say, oh, it's okay, you were busy, you were stressed, whatever. They're so forgiving. They're so willing to give us a second chance. So I hope parents realize that we all screw up. There's no way around it. But if we just own our mistakes and try to do better, our kids, that's all they want. And they're perfectly fine with that.
Yeah. So I would encourage you, you know, chooselife.org. I've got my TED Talks. The Hot Lava Talks, a great place to start. There's a goal cast I did where I talked to parents and a bunch of dads, actually, in a library in Montreal, Canada. And you can watch the film at tellmystoryfilm.com or just Google Tell My Story Film. It'll show up in a bunch of different streaming channels. Watch it with your kids. The people who watch it with their kids and have a conversation with their kids about mental health, it starts the conversation.
I love it. That's a great way. Great conversation starter. So I hope that everyone will check out your work. I think that the work you're doing is amazing. I think that the mission you're on is powerful. And I think that your son, Ryan, would be very proud of how you're showing up in the world and trying to honor his memory with this mission.
Thank you. I appreciate everything you're doing to help parents.
Thank you. So I hope everybody will check out all of your work and your organization and your TED Talks and the GoalCast and everything. And I hope that it triggers the beginning of some really fruitful, connected conversations between parents and their kids.
Absolutely.
So thank you for this time that you spent with me today. I am so, I enjoyed our conversation a lot, even though it was heavy. And I think we've brought parents some real value. So I hope that they will check out your work. And if you have any questions for either one of us, just send me an email and I will be sure and respond back to you. And we will work together to answer your questions or direct you in the right direction if you need some help with your kiddos. So thank you. And that wraps up today's conversation. Wherever you are in this world, I hope that you make it a very enlightened day for yourself.
Thanks, Erin.
Thank you. That wraps up this episode of Powerful Parenting for Today's Kids. If you know anyone who could benefit from this episode or this podcast in general, please share it with them. Also, I always love hearing feedback from my listeners. I welcome you to send me an email to erin@erin-taylor.com if you have any comments or questions that come up for you in an episode. Our children are our future. Parenting them is the most sacred task we will ever be asked to do. It truly does take a village to raise a child. Let's help each other to raise our children to be who it is they are meant to be. If at any point you feel like you need a little extra help and support, reach out to me. I am here to help you.